And welcome again to the Ask Beatty Show. And you know, it's interesting, every single time that I listen to the theme song of the show, of course, the Beatles, it really reminds me, and I want it to remind you, that whether or not we are rich or poor or black or white or a celebrity or gay or straight or trans or Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Republican or Democrat, that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And there is no one that is immune from life's challenges. And of course, the real question, and this is what I discuss with patients every single day in my practice here in New York City and in East Hampton, is that when things are not going well, when you are on a never-ending merry-go-round ride and a roller coaster ride and not a fun ride, you need to make a decision. And that decision is, are you going to continue? Are you going to continue on the same old ride, expecting different consequences? Or are you going to sit back and stop the noise and ask yourself, what am I going to do? Whether or not it is about my depression, my anxiety, the relationship issues that I'm having, or perhaps I really want a relationship and I don't know what to do. And of course, I hear so often here, especially in New York City, from women. Women will tell me all the time, there are no good men in New York City. And of course, that is simply not true. And it's really a question. It's really a question of figuring out what to do about the challenges in our life. You know, for example, if we're looking at depression statistics, you may not be aware that there are approximately 16 million people in the United States, that is adults, that translates into 1 in 5 Americans, that are suffering from clinical depression. And what about anxiety disorders? Well, the anxiety disorder spectrum has really overtaken the depression, and we have about 40 million adults that are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And looking at suicides, I was going through some of the literature a couple of weeks ago, and suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. And since 2011, there's been a 400, you think about it, 400% increase nationally by self-poisoning by young people. That is so shocking. It is so scary. And of course, the real question is, you know, what are we doing about it? We can cite the statistics, and yet, you know, you kind of wonder what's going on in the schools. I mean, that's probably the best place other than the homes for early identification and early intervention. Homicides, as an example, by so-called intimate partners, has increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. 4 women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partners. So that we are not doing well in this country in terms of our mental health and in terms of our relationships. And look at the divorce statistics, okay? The divorce statistics for first marriages, 48%. And for second marriages, that number goes up to 67%. And then people, when I'm giving talks around the country, and I'll say, well, what about for third marriages? And what about for fourth marriages? And I think by that time, the audience is becoming more and more and more cynical. But the reality is that the divorce statistics for third marriages is 74%. So what is going on? There are more self-help books than relationship books. And frankly, and I was discussing this with a colleague very recently, and I think that much of what's out there, as good as it is, I think that we are really missing the boat. And, you know, when I look at the world of relationships, for me, I mean, I have identified the three things that we actually need to do to never make a mistake in love again. And matchmakers are fine and meditation is great. But the first thing we really need to do is that we need to be in a good place ourselves, emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. We need to be willing, and it's hard work to look at ourselves and deal with what I call our skeletons in the closet, our unfinished business from our past, beginning with our family of origin, and that includes abuse of various different kinds, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, things that really continue to get in the way of our lives, the depression that doesn't seem to go away. We've tried, we run, we talk, we meditate, we try to have really, really good diets, and we take different supplements, and yet there's certain things that are still lingering. And it's a question again of what to do. What are we going to do? And you know, what I have found is that I like to share good news, because I think that if people are really committed to acknowledging and addressing and resolving their issues as best as that we possibly can, even though we can't change history, it's absolutely amazing the transformations that can happen within ourselves and within our relationships. But the reality, my friends, is that it really does take some work. And you have to ask yourself whether or not you're talking about legal issues or money issues or physical issues or relationship issues. Are you willing? Are you really willing to do the work? And, you know, people will call me for therapy. And the first question, and I think the people on the other end of the phone are maybe a little surprised, but the first question that I ask is, are you serious? I want to work with people who are serious. And if people are serious, we're halfway there. And yet I find, you know, so often that, you know, people will typically call me in a crisis. Nobody ever calls to improve their communication or to improve their problem solving skills. And then when they start to realize that this is not going to be a fun tea party, that I am not just going to sit there and say, and I'm not just going to sit there and say that I am so sorry. I'm so sorry that life is so tough, but that there's going to have to be a plan of action once we do, of course, emotionally talk about what did and did not happen in their lives. So that there is an action plan that people, at least people who are working with me in therapy, really need to commit to. Otherwise, the reality is that it is simply not going to work. So that if you are ready, if you are really ready, and that depression and anxiety and the sexual problems and the relationship problems and the substance abuse issues are still taking over your life, today is a new day. And that's something that my father, who was my mentor, my tennis coach, he used to teach me that, you know, today is just today, and that tomorrow you might get out on the baseball field after having struck out yesterday and the day before and the day before that, and with some modification and with some adjustments and with having a really, really good coach, you can get out there and you can hit a home run. So today could very well be the day that you will begin to be really serious about taking that first step and making some changes. And by the way, the call-in number here is 888-874-4888. And some other things that I just wanted to remind you about, really important things that, of course, Dr. Gary Null, he talks about every single day. And the question is that are you really doing every single day what is in your best interest, including having plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and exercising? I don't know what I would do if I did not exercise. For me, it's been a great way to alleviate stress. It's a great anti-anxiety. It's a great antidepressant, and that includes weight training and yoga, and for some people, meditation and massage and acupuncture, and of course, looking at the people who you have in your life. And we want loving people, supportive people, people who really care about us. And when we talk about toxins, I think most people these days, they think about chemical toxins in the environment. And when I talk about toxins, I talk about toxic people. And we cannot allow to have toxic people in our lives. They will kill us. They will destroy our spirit. They will destroy our well-being if we allow them to do it. And I'm not suggesting just walking away from conflict. Obviously, if there are issues and problems, and we all have issues and problems in the best possible relationships that we might have, if you find that you're with people who are not willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve, and care enough about you and care enough about the relationship to really work through the issues, what are your alternatives? To continue to do more of the same and feel crazy and angry and upset every single time you encounter these people? Well, for people who've been listening to the show, you know that I have a zero toxic policy in both my professional and in my personal life. And sometimes that means eliminating, and I'm not talking about killing anybody, but eliminating people, your friends, and sometimes even your family. Other things that we can do, of course, positive visualization and dancing and listening to music. And I have found that helping others, my oh my, I mean, I've been a psychotherapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years. And I sometimes wonder who's gotten more out of the encounters and the experiences. I mean, I've worked with thousands and thousands of different people from every single background. And in helping others, it certainly helped me a great deal to understand the dynamics of people who I never, ever would have met in my own personal life. So are you really on board here? And a couple of other things about diet, eliminating the sugars and the sodas and the alcohol and the nicotine. And of course, the one thing that we are all so preoccupied by every single day is the social media and how many likes and how many followers and who has responded to our emails and our texts. And I think that what we all need to do is to find a way to minimize, yes, to minimize our social media and the cell phones and the computers as much as we possibly can, so that we can really find a balance between our work and our fun and our well-being and our relationships. So I wonder, when you listen to this, how many of you are really, really doing, if not all of these things, then at least some of these things that are in your best interest? And in fact, every single time a patient leaves my office, that is the homework that I give them. I want them to be mindful as they navigate their days and they navigate their nights, whether or not the things that they are doing, the interactions that they are having, the behaviors that they are engaging in, are they in fact in their best interest? And it really forces us to be a lot more self-aware and introspective to make sure that we are doing things that are really good for us rather than things that are destructive, self-destructive, and self-sabotaging. Well, I have a really, really terrific guest today. And it's not often that I have a guest who has a book and who has had work that he is engaged in for many, many years that I know very, very little about. But Mark Horn is someone who I met at Ramamu, which is a progressive synagogue on the Upper West Side in New York City. And before the services began, we began to talk. And he told me that he had written a book. The title of the book, and this is a book that I absolutely recommend. You can buy it on Amazon. It's in various different bookstores around the country. Tarot and the Gates of Light, A Kabbalistic Path to Liberation. And I have to tell you, I know very little about Kabbalah. I know less about tarot. But what I do know is that people are suffering in many ways. And I was so curious. I was so curious about how, for example, the 49-day mystical practice, knowing as counting the Omer, which is an ancient Jewish ritual observed between the holidays of Passover and Shavuot, also known as Pentecost, designed to cleanse and purify the soul in preparation for spiritual revelation and a personal connection with God, might be helpful and enlightening to you, my audience. And I was also really interested in how it would be personally enlightening as well. So I asked Mark to come on the show, and he has a great deal of wisdom to share with us. So welcome. Yes, it's true. You have a great deal of wisdom to share. So, the book, and I want to know, like, how did you, Mark, begin this journey for yourself, even before you wrote the book? Where did it begin? Why did it begin?
Well, you could say, you could start looking at it from beginning with tarot, or you could start looking at it from the path of counting the Omer itself. Let me start with the Omer, actually.
Okay.
So not a lot of people are familiar with this practice, counting the Omer.
What does that mean, counting the Omer?
It is actually a biblical commandment. And it was based, between the holidays of Passover and Pentecost, there were, in the ancient days, in the days of the temple, it was required, it was commanded that the ancient Israelites bring an omer, which is a measure, so it's kind of like half a gallon, of grain, of barley, actually, to the temple every day as a sacrifice over the course of these 49 days. And
why 49 days, by the way?
It's actually connected to the agricultural cycle.
Okay.
And that is that in the course of those 49 days, well, then you get to the holiday of Pentecost. But there is a mythic underpinning underneath this 49 days. And that is, you know, Passover is the holiday of the liberation from Egypt. When the Jews left Egypt after the 10 plagues, Pharaoh said, you can go. And Moses leads the Israelites out into the desert. And that's the start. You know, that Passover is the telling of that story. And then what happens is the Israelites start wandering through the desert. Of course, they have their incident at the Red Sea with Pharaoh and passing through. But it takes them 49 days to get to Mount Sinai. And on the 50th day, and that's what Pentecost means, actually, 50th day, over the course of those 49 days, they had to prepare themselves in order to be able to receive a spiritual revelation, because they had spent all their lives as slaves. And as enslaved people, they were not ready to take full spiritual responsibility for themselves. So the path of going through the desert in those 49 days was a path of preparation to be able to be spiritually an adult and to take responsibility for one's life so that one can actually have an adult relationship with the divine.
Were they aware that they were on some kind of a spiritual journey?
Probably not. No, as you read of what happens as they go through the desert, it is really, you learn, of course, within days of their leaving Egypt, all the ancient Israelites are complaining. Why did we leave? Oh, if we'd only stayed there, we'd have nice food, we'd have beds. Because whenever you give up something that this is a practice of saying giving up old behaviors that are not necessarily healthy for yourself. Uh-huh. And when you try and let go of a bad habit, a couple of days in, you kind of think back and you think, oh, it wasn't so bad.
Right.
I want to do that again. Uh-huh. Well, so when you listen to the complaints of the ancient Israelites as they're going through the desert, it's like listening to your own inner voices telling you, oh, go back to doing what you used to do. It's okay. It's not so bad. Even though it doesn't work. Absolutely. Uh-huh. And so this is a path of training yourself over the course of 49 days to be more of a spiritual adult and to let go of behaviors that get in the way of your relationship to God and to your relationship, a heart relationship with all other people, so that you can see the divine in all the people that you know. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that you can also recognize and accept and love the divine that is within you.
Uh-huh. So how do people actually, let's say, I cited the horrendous divorce statistics, the domestic violence statistics. Mm-hmm. How would we then begin this journey? Mm. Let's say people, they've tried therapy, they meditate, they're eating right, and yet there are things that are still really amiss, so they are going to try Plan C.
Okay.
So how does it begin?
So, I often refer to it as kind of like a spiritual gymnasium when you go for a workout. Mm-hmm. When you first begin to do this, you're not used to thinking about these things.
Right.
But it is working these spiritual muscles so that you are stronger each day to be able to look at your own stuff. Because in some ways, this is a psycho-spiritual path of gradation, with each of the 49 days taking you deeper within yourself to look at all the different ways that you have succeeded and failed in your relationships with others, with yourself, with God.
I would think that just like with therapy, it would be very difficult to do alone. Mm. And that you would need a coach, you would need a therapist, you would need a teacher. I mean, a lot of people, for example, in my world, are suffering from severe clinical depression and various other psychiatric disorders. And they're not really sure what it's about, leave alone how to get out of it.
Well, this is not obviously a replacement for medical intervention for things that are really serious, because, of course, clinical depression really requires a certain kind of medical and psychological work.
Absolutely.
But this is a good aid to help somebody really examine themselves. It enables you, it really gives you a structure for yourself on a daily basis to look at all of the different facets of your life and not to dwell on them, not to blame yourself for anything, just to sort of look at them for what they are and what the results you have gotten from it is, so that then you can make adjustments and you can see where you need to change and where you're going that is a good thing.
So if somebody reads your book and they're thinking, I've tried A, B, C, and D, but I really want to commit to the 49 steps of spiritual refinement, what would it sound like, Mark? What would people be saying to themselves, and how would they actually begin at home? To start the journey, to start the process.
Okay, so each day, so one of the things about this process, because it is Kabbalistic, is that each day is a combination of different kind of psycho-spiritual energies. It's actually 49 combinations of these energies. And so that when you put the different combinations together and you look at them, they lead you to ask certain questions of
yourself. Such as what? Such as what?
So at the very start,
right,
for example,
the start, yes.
Very first day, because that's what you're asking about.
Yes.
And because this is a mirror, a psychological mirror of the freedom from Egypt. Because what you're doing is you're freeing yourself from your inner Egypt.
Right.
What is it that you are a slave to? And so, in fact, the very first day is asking, what is it that I am enslaved to?
And what if people don't know?
Ah.
I feel enslaved. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's about.
Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, if you don't know what it is, you just know that you have a yearning to be free.
Right.
And over the course of the next 49 days, you're going to explore all of the different things that you do and all of your relationships that help you see where you have been blocked mm-hmm. from feeling the divine energy that is everybody's birthright and that flows through all of us. And as you remove these blocks, the energy flows through you. But you really need to sort of look at these things on a daily basis. This is really a path of devotion.
Uh-huh. Mm. So how much time, of course, everybody these days, we're busy, we're stressed, we're working, we have kids, we have families. How much time, actual time, and I'm trying to visualize this, Mark, also for myself, to see how this might... what it might look like at home.
So, so one of the things I do in the book is I give you two images to look at every day as a way of projecting your issues onto these images. They're tarot cards, but they are images of everyday life. And I often refer to them as this is a kind of a Renaissance Rorschach test.
Uh-huh.
You know, you look at these images and you think, oh, what does this have to do with this problem in my life? And with each day, I give people a list of questions to guide them, questions to ask themselves. But of course, everybody's different. And when you look at these images, you may find that there are other questions that come up for you. And so part of the practice is to sort of examine these questions and answer them. Some of this practice is journaling. So you'll spend maybe, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes at the most journaling about these questions and your answers to them.
Well, you mentioned tarot cards. So where does the tarot card phenomenon fit into all of this?
Okay, so this is it might sound a little complicated.
It does.
So bear with me a minute. As I said, this is a Kabbalistic practice.
Uh-huh.
And for
people who don't know what Kabbalah is and what a Kabbalistic practice is, if you could just define it for us.
So Kabbalah is a path of Jewish mysticism. It is when people read the Bible, they look for the hidden meaning in what is actually there. And Kabbalah is all about finding that hidden meaning and learning to connect to divine energy in your life. And so this is one of those practices to help you connect to that divine energy. And one of the things, so I'll make an analogy, since I'm sure many of you are listeners will be familiar with the chakra system. You know, that in the body, there are seven chakras connected to different energy systems in the body. Well, from the point of view of the Jewish mystics, there were 10 sort of, we'll call them energy centers. What they're called in Jewish mysticism is sephirot. And so you have 10 sephirot that are within you, but also are part of the entire structure of the universe. So that as we vibrate with these various energy centers, we actually attract to ourselves or find ourselves attracted to people who are vibrating in similar ways with those energies.
That I understand.
Right, of course. And so one of the things this path does is that it teaches you each day of this practice, you're looking at two of these energies in relationship, because this is all about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's how do these two energies in you relate to each other, and how do they then help you relate to others in your life? And so each day you're going to look at these two energies. But traditionally, as Kabbalah was taught, and we talked about these energy centers, the sephirot, for many people, they're very abstract. They're kind of heady. They're hard to get into. And so one of the things that I realized is that the tarot deck actually was created, and its entire structure is based on Kabbalah, so that certain of the cards in every deck are in fact representations of either negative or positive manifestations of this sephirotic energy. So that if every day you take two of the cards related to that day's energy, and you look at them, and you think, okay, I see in this card, somebody is hiding behind what looks like a wall. You know, they've walled themselves off, and they've got a little bandage on their head. They're looking wounded, but they've left a door open. It's not open all the way, but it's open because this is somebody. Even though they've been wounded, and even though they're defended, they're leaving open a space because they desperately want to connect to somebody.
But is this person then not really projecting their own feelings and their own place
and their own wounds
and their own rules onto others
and onto the situation?
Right.
And so, for example, there's one card. I refer to it as, and there are many cards that are about projection, but there's one card in which you see a figure looking at seven cups. And in each cup, there's something else that's being offered, right? And the question is, is what you're seeing reality? Or in fact, are all of these things that you're looking at are your projections of what you want? And so it is each day you're faced with the question of, what is the reality of this situation? Am I projecting here? Am I seeing something real? You know, how do my defenses get in the way? Where is my heart open? Where does it shut down and why? Right? So all of these images sort of spark stories from your life. And if you read the book, one of the ways I help guide people through this is that I actually tell my own story so that when you get to a particular day and there are a couple of cards, I'll say, well, this is when I look at this, this is what happens for me. But of course, you do this on a yearly basis, and every year you look at these cards, something else comes up because you're always working on yourself. But and there's always something to see because you're always blind to something in yourself.
Right.
And these cards help you see them.
So, for example, if somebody were to call you,
mm-hmm.
okay, and they would come in,
mm-hmm.
and they would say, I've been very depressed because mm-hmm. I'm lonely and I'm looking for love,
mm-hmm.
and I've done everything I can possibly do, mm-hmm. or at least I think I have, mm-hmm. and I seem to be getting nowhere. So that is, of course, in my world, it's called the presenting problem.
Yes.
I mean, there are many other
right.
issues, of mm-hmm. course, you know, beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So how and what would you actually do with somebody like this who is coming to you specifically because they want to find love?
Okay. So that's interesting because, of course, as I say, when you work with seven of these sephirot, and the very first sephirah, which is 1 week of work, 7 days, is the week of love.
Oh, okay.
So the very first week is the week of love. But every week subsequent to that, there is one day of love. So that you are almost, every week, you are looking at the way love appears in your life.
Or doesn't. Right.
What your relationship is in terms of loving yourself, in loving the parts of yourself that you may not feel so proud of.
So then what do you do? So someone says, I hate myself, okay? Mm-hmm. I was abused as a child, and I'm still carrying mm-hmm. around the messages that I learned from my parents, mm-hmm. and I hate who I am, and I hate my life.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you do?
So it's interesting you bring that up, because I'm actually an abuse survivor, and I talk about that in the book.
Yes, you do.
And, you know, it's but part of this is, in fact, confronting the pain.
Of course.
And being with it, but also, you know, it's not letting you, you're supposed to have it. It's not supposed to have you. Mm-hmm. And by looking at it as a projection outside in these images, it helps you see it from a different point of view so that you can write about it and set yourself free of it.
Uh-huh. So when you say that you could set yourself free, the person, I mean, again, in working with you is different than in working with me. So the person has come to you because somehow whatever it is that they've tried before has not worked for them.
Yes.
So in looking at the cards, I mean, do people just randomly, you know, and I'm going to have my own reading with you at some point because I really want to experience how this all works. So do they just randomly select cards?
Oh, no, no. Each day, each day there are, they have a choice of four sets of two cards because each day there are two Sephirot that are the energy of that day. And so each day you work with the two cards that are connected.
What does that mean that you work with the two cards?
So you put them in front of you.
Yes.
And you know, from the book you learn what the meanings of these cards are. And you think, okay, so I know that this card is about feelings of rejection, right? And I look at this other card and I, you know, and I see that it is about holding oneself apart through feelings of superiority, right? And so then you look at those two images and you think, where do I do these things in my life? How do I, and it, you know, and I mention this of feelings of superiority because when I look at that card, that's the thing that comes up for me. Someone else will look at this and they'll look at that image and they'll say, oh, how do I, you know, hold myself apart from somebody by giving them a gift that actually pushes them away?
Ah.
Right? Everybody will have a different response to those images because they're multivalent. And so it really becomes a very personal path. And when I work with somebody, I say, well, this is what came up for me, but this is about you. What do you see in these images that connect to these energies? And then you ask those questions of yourself.
So it is like taking a Rorschach test.
Yes.
Very much so.
Very much so.
So what I am going to see is very different than what you would be seeing.
Definitely. Definitely. Because it is about your path. And it's about what's inside of you and what you project, in fact, onto the images. It reveals to you the things inside of you that you might not always be willing to say or to actually express. But when you see them expressed in the images, you say, oh, I get that. That's when I do X.
Uh-huh. Right? And then, of course, there needs to be the commitment to examine X and Y and make a decision whether or not you're going to modify or change the behaviors, your behaviors.
Well, you know, there are, I give people suggestions every day for how to work with what we'll call them complexes or sort of rooted behaviors that are very ingrained.
Such as?
Let's see. Goodness. Well, I mean, so you're a sex therapist?
That's one of the things that I do.
So let's talk about sexual compulsion.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things that comes up in the book. And it comes up because, you know, so as I said, each week has a different energy. Mm-hmm. The first week is love. The sixth week is very much about sex and our relationship to and how we express our sexuality. And because, as I say, each day has within it the other energies of the week. So the first day is about how we express our sexuality with love. The second day of that week is how do we relate in our sexuality with healthy boundaries? Or where are we judgmental about our own sexuality or about the sexuality of others? Right? So each day, it looks at it from a very different facet. And if you're struggling, if you're somebody who is struggling with sexual compulsion, or you're just making the same decision again and again, and it's not getting you what you want, this really helps you look at the behavior that you're doing in a way that helps you step apart from it. So, I mean, obviously, it is not a substitute for therapy or for work that really is about changing behavior. But because you're doing this yourself in a way that is meant to be self-loving rather than self-critical.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Give us an example of sexual compulsion. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I need to be, and I think a lot of people need to be very concrete. Mm-hmm. So somebody has defined for themselves that they have a sexual compulsion, mm-hmm. such as what?
Okay. So, you know, I'm a gay man. I came of age in the late 60s and early 70s, mm-hmm. At a time of the early gay liberation movement.
Yes.
And during that time, as opposed to, you know, the last 10 years, we were not interested in marriage rights.
Right.
You know, we looked at marriage as a dead institution, uh-huh. and we wanted sexual freedom. Mm-hmm. So I was socialized into a world of endless sexual possibility. Mm-hmm. And that can be exciting. But over time, if all you're doing is looking at other people sexually and it's all about novelty, it gets in the way of an actual deep, committed relationship, uh-huh. right? So that...
if that's what you want.
Right, if that's what you want.
Right.
Not everybody wants that. It is not right for everyone, but it is something that I want. And so one of the things that I have done when I've done the work on this particular path is I've looked at the ways I've used sexual promiscuity or acting out sexually with other people as a way of avoiding intimacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Hmm. So once you made that discovery, mm-hmm. okay, you needed to be committed to making a shift.
Yes.
Did it take, because for so many people, for so many of us, mm-hmm. it takes time to acknowledge
yeah.
the things that are really not working mm-hmm. in our lives mm-hmm. and in our relationships. And of course, acknowledge is only the first step, and then be serious about making a commitment and taking the action steps to make some change. And of course, you talk about change.
Yes.
And change is difficult. It's difficult. Challenging.
Right. So actually, let's go back to the mythic underpinning of this once again.
Yes.
The ancient Israelites, who are all complaining and are addicted to going back to Egypt, uh-huh. right? And they complain all the way through the desert, and they get to Mount Sinai. And Moses goes up, and he gets the revelation of the Torah, and he comes down. And what does he see?
What does he see?
The people worshiping a golden calf.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
And part of what this path teaches us is that, of course, we want to make change, and of course we commit and we're serious. But we fall and we fail again and again.
Right.
And part of the training here is not to beat yourself up when you trip, not to beat yourself up when you fall, but to look at yourself with love, to look at yourself with the love that the divine has for you and with the compassion. And actually, week three is all about compassion.
Self-compassion
for others,
uh-huh.
right? And so it's compassion for yourself on this path is very important because
I've messed up,
right? Because
don't beat myself up.
Everybody messes up.
We do,
right?
We do.
Human beings are imperfect. It's built into the system by the divine. Why? Because it teaches us, in fact, to have compassion for others because everyone else fails too. Right? So everyone is just like you, and they're trying to do their best. And so it's important that you extend the compassion for them that you want for yourself when you fail. Mm-hmm. And of course, many of us grew up with parents who were hypercritical, so that learning to give ourselves compassion rather than listening to the hypercritical voices in our heads is also part of this path mm-hmm. of recognizing where it is that we aren't compassionate for ourselves, and why is that?
And you know what I've noticed, again, in my world of psychotherapy and sex therapy, is that there always has to be a major crisis before anybody, at least, again, in my own private practice world, before anybody is really serious about doing anything. So that if there's only a little bit of pain, then, you know, well, it's not such a big deal. And do you find the same thing, that you see people whose lives are really falling apart as I do, before they reach out to you and ask for help?
Well, that is, in fact, one of the reasons people go to, therapists, but also one of the reasons people come back to religion and various spiritual practices, is because they're experiencing either a psychological or a spiritual crisis of one kind or another.
Exactly.
And, you know, one of the spiritual crises in my life, many years ago, someone I loved very deeply killed himself. And the year and a half after that of working through how it affected me, how it affected the community that I was in, because it didn't only affect me, it affected his family and all of the people we knew. And so we really had to examine how it was affecting us. And also, because none of us were to blame for this, but we also had to look, because it's a system, how were we sort of connected into it? Where did we miss signs?
Lessons to be learned.
Lessons to be learned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you discover?
Well, one of the things that I discovered is that, you know, I was, it was, how do I explain this? So there, as I say, there were signs that this was going to happen. But the thing is, the signs that were there, if I allowed myself to see them, it was going to threaten other things inside of me.
Such as?
I think this is maybe a little too personal for that. But actually, some of it is in the book. Some of it is revealed in the book. But, you know, but it is very much about really looking at, okay, what is it that I didn't want to see in this relationship that blocked me from seeing his pain? And some of that is, in fact, I didn't want to see his pain because it meant that I was going to have to feel more of my own pain. And so people will do anything to avoid.
Exactly. And of course, I talk a lot about, and in my book, about how looking at the reality of ourselves and our relationships, it takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of chutzpah to be honest with ourselves about where we're at in our lives, and also about the people who we are engaged in,
yes,
you know, personally and professionally, and then to make some decisions about what to do that's going to be in our best interest.
Exactly. And I was mentioned before that there was this mythic underpinning, but I talked about it as an agricultural holiday, that every one of those 41 days, the people brought an omer of grain, which is a sacrifice to the temple. And what we're doing every day of these 49 days is that we're looking at these behaviors and faults within ourselves, and we're offering them up to God as a sacrifice. That in fact, we're sanctifying the things that we have thought of as faults and as problems, but looking at them as the teachers and the gifts that they are and that they can give us if we open our heart to both the love and the pain in each situation.
Now, as people approach the end of the 49 steps, there are major internal and external transformations and changes that people are actually able to experience.
Oh, definitely. And you know, and each year, you know, I do this every year. Because every year there's a, you know, period between Passover, and Jews all around the world do this every year.
And this is not just for Jews.
And it's, but the way this is written is not just for Jews.
Right.
You know, I've opened up this practice because I think it is valuable for everyone to do. And I think it can, it's a really, it's a gift for someone to sort of do this and heal themselves.
Right.
But, you know, healing is never over.
No.
Right? It's a lifelong process. There's always something to look at in yourself. Mm-hmm. So every year, you know, I will approach it with, this is something I want to change. Let's look at it over the next 49 days. Or I will approach it as, okay, I don't know what's going on, but as I work with this over the 49 days, something will be revealed. And then I will work with that. And by the end of the 50th day, because you've worked at it from so many different facets, you just feel lighter. Now, from a traditional Kabbalistic point of view, Pentecost is the day of revelation. It's the day that the Torah comes down from Mount Sinai. And for Christians, Pentecost is the day that when the apostles were gathered in the upper room, tongues of fire descended so that they were able to speak the gospel in other languages. And the way I talk about the 50th day of this practice is that if you have cleared some of these blockages, mm-hmm. you are better able to feel the healing divine energy flowing through you so that you're able to sort of hear what the divine message is in your life that will help you heal with this. Mm-hmm. Now, some people will actually hear something. Some people will feel something. Everybody's experience with this is very different and private and personal. And that's also part of the myth for the Jews, you know, that, you know, well, part of the story is that everybody who was at the foot of Mount Sinai heard the voice of God. And in fact, and then one of the things that they say for Pentecost for the Christians is that now revelation and the voice of God is open to everyone all the time. You just have to clear the channel. So this is a path of clearing your channels so that you can get that message.
So it's clearing the channels, getting clarity about your issues, and then taking action.
Oh, very definitely.
Of course, one can, you know, hear and clear the channels and not do anything differently.
Well, one of the things, so as I say, after every day, you know, I list a number of questions, but I also list some suggested actions to take.
Such as, give us an example. We have a few minutes left, so I want people to, you know, leave with concrete ideas about what they can do.
Okay. So one of the things that we examine over the course of these 7 weeks is one's relationship to money.
Okay.
And that, you know, and the one's relationship to money is very touchy for a lot of people. So we really look at the ways that you use money in relationships and how you use it to distance people or to control people or to defend yourself. So as you examine how you use money and resources in these ways, there are suggestions to do different things. It's kind of like being in a little bit of a playground to try things out a little differently and see how things change, how the results change in your life.
Of course, it requires an acknowledgement on each person's part, kind of like an aha moment.
Yes.
Ah, I didn't realize that using money as an example, that this is what I do.
Well, that's one of the things I think that, you know, over the course of the 49 days of working this path, almost every day is an aha moment of something that you do that, you know, gets in the way and blocks you from feeling this divine energy that keeps you from other people and from your own relationship with the divine.
But then how do you motivate people after the aha moment to do, to take the action?
Well, you know, so my feeling is if you have started to do this, obviously you want to do it now.
You may be very ambivalent about doing it.
You may be very ambivalent, and there may be days where you put down the book and you say, oh, this is too much. I can't do this.
Right.
But something has called to you. And
to begin the process.
To begin the process.
Right.
And when you put the book down, it is already working its way through you.
Hopefully.
So, I I've done this practice, as I say, over the course of years. And there have been times when I've stopped in the middle, walked away, and then I thought, all right, well, you have to face it. You have to go back. Right? And
Or not.
Yes. You know, it is, each, as I say, each person's path is individual. You get as far as you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. but it is everyone's path, and it enables you to look at, as I say, this is a path of inner reflection mm-hmm. of all of your stuff
right.
that helps you make, I'd say, a better human and divine connection.
And being serious to make the changes.
Yes, and being serious to make the changes.
To do the work.
And to do the work.
So our work is not so different. It's very complementary.
Yes, it is complementary. And I, you know, I often say to people that, you know, this is the kind of work that if you're doing this on your own, it's good to have a therapist to talk, because things will come up for you
right.
that you can bring into your therapy.
Because mm-hmm. you had mentioned to me, I think it was in an email, because I had asked you, could we do this during the show? Mm. You said that some people cry, some people
yes.
fall apart. So,
yeah.
I mean, there are obviously a lot of things that come up.
Yes.
That can be potentially very painful.
Yes.
And very difficult to actually look at mm-hmm. and take in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I would imagine, Mark, that you really can't do this on your own.
Well, one of the things that is also part of the tradition, Kabbalistically, mm-hmm. is something called Hevruta. And that is, you do this with a spiritually intimate friend.
Okay.
Now, for some people, the person who they're most spiritually intimate with is, in fact, their therapist. Mm-hmm. But, you know, churches and synagogues around the country have people who are called spiritual directors who you work with on your spiritual path. And this is the kind of thing that you would do with them as well.
Now, if you saw that somebody was really having some serious psychological, psychiatric issues as you were going through all of this with them, I mean, you would refer them.
Oh, I would definitely refer them to somebody because, of course, as I say, this kicks up stuff.
Yes.
And everybody needs help.
We all do.
Everybody needs help.
Yes.
And there's no shame in asking for it.
Exactly. And I think that that's something that people have to be able to take in and accept and not see it as a weakness and not see it as a failure, you know, to be able to reach out. Because, you know, I say this all the time, is that life is tough for all of us. We don't need to navigate this life on our own.
Oh, one of the things we work with in the book also is shame. And, you know, as you say, you know, people don't want to come and expose their faults. But in fact, this is what brings us together.
Exactly.
And this, you know, and having compassion for other people's faults and for your own creates deep empathy and relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I think that this book is amazing. As I say, I went through it as best as I could, not understanding a lot and, you know, much more to talk about. So the book, everybody, is Tarot and the Gates of Light, A Kabbalistic Path to Liberation. And it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon.
And it is in the stores.
And if there people want to contact me, they can go to my website, which is gatesoflighttarot.com.
Well, and thank you so much,
Mark
Horn, for being here and to be continued.